Hello, I'm Matthew Plum Fernandez. Very honored to be here. It's a really great audience and a selection of speakers. I've titled my talk, Every Input to Every Output, A Productive Multiplicity, because I wanted to sort of focus on a particular angle and also, I guess, a short survey of recent works and how I've got to where I am now. And it's really interesting looking at Oliver Larick's work, because I feel like we've probably inadvertently collaborated lots of times because I write software that downloads 3D models off the internet and does things with them. So I'm pretty sure, sorry, Oliver, your work is probably in my presentation. I don't even know about it, but we'll see. So I have this Tumblr blog called Algopop, and it's not really a blog, but more like an annotated scrapbook of anecdotes that sort of inform a lot of my practice and my research. So I usually start presentations with a few anecdotes from Algopop that help kind of foreground my thinking. This is one anecdote of Facebook users, elderly women like Aileen Hocking, who upon writing their name, grandpa and grandma gets auto-completed to the name Grandmaster Flash. And talking about inputs and outputs, you have to imagine there's a lot of input data that has to be input into Facebook to create this anomaly. This is not something hard-coded. This is like a statistical sort of deduction from all that input data. And what's interesting is that this anomaly is not like a singular output. It's actually systemic. So every grandma would get auto-completed as Grandmaster Flash. I really like the last comment, which is I didn't mean to hit the Grandmaster Flash, whatever that is. This is another anecdote from Algopop where the notification screen has notifications from two different apps. One is a news app that has the breaking news that seven I have been shot at Florida nightclub, and Monster, obviously a recruitment agency, has found seven new jobs for you. And what I like is this kind of momentarily explains why a recruitment agency might be called Monster. I'm very much interested in Zazzle, which is a print-on-demand marketplace, and it allows users to contribute their own designs for t-shirts and mugs and other paraphernalia. And this has been exploited by software programmers that write software scripts to upload designs that would satisfy a whole gamut of a long tail marketplace, which results in really strange objects that you can buy. I mean, they're sort of so niche, you know. I can't think of many people who'd want to buy a tie where my mom is that crazy woman who loves to coach water polo. And this is an interesting little project. Someone made a Twitter bot that would simply retweet any tweets containing the words retweet to win. And this is a collection of everything this person won through Twitter. So I'm going to move on to some sort of projects I've done, and I might kind of gloss over quickly some of my earlier works because I don't want to be short for time for the latter works. But I've been kind of ongoingly exploring variations on Mickey Mouse, and this really started, again, I started scanning things in 2012, but I didn't have the foresight to go to a museum. Instead, I was scanning things around my house, and I was really interested in this kind of junk 3D scans done with the photogrammetry technique. But I was kind of more interesting, rather than sort of faithful reproductions of scans, more sort of what you can do once you put that into software that can sort of digitally manipulate and distort those things. I wasn't so much interested in sort of faithful reproductions. I was just skipping ahead to like what Oliver Larick's crowd does, which is then put it in software to generate these kind of variations. But the variations on Mickey Mouse tended to be the ones that are most interesting, because no matter how much you try to destroy Mickey and blow his head off, there's still this icon that you can recognize. that's the original Mickey Mouse that I scanned, which kind of led to these sort of emails. This is iMaterialize, which is a 3D print company. We refused to print this derivative because they argued that it was clearly a breach of copyright. And this opened up a whole new interest in me for me into sort of authorship and how to evade authorship, or how to play around in the gray area. Like, when does Mickey stop becoming Mickey? And so, like, one of the strategies I played around with is this kind of smoothing algorithm, which just kind of kept smoothing and smoothing to kind of find that exact moment where they said, okay, we'll 3D print this. which is really great. So that's second one, number three. And then this kind of led on to an interest in actually every other Mickey Mouse on the internet. So instead of, I kind of stopped working so much with my own scans and started looking through these kind of online databases where you can look through existing 3D models and people share their 3D models. And I started to find a lot of like really interesting amateur versions of Mickey Mouse, some that are questionably, you know, you could declare as being Mickey Mouse or not. But then this has kind of led to like a piece I called Every Mickey, which is, yeah, every Mickey Mouse that I could find sort of collaged into one. The problem is when you do these projects that declare that you're going to find every one, you'll always keep finding more. This one I'm not sure if this should be in every Mickey because it's mutant Mickey. I don't know if it's kind of gone too far and it's not a Mickey anymore. In 2015, I had this project that Kasia introduced called Novice Art Blogger. Here it's presented at Stedelijk Museum. Well, not at the museum, but their project space. And this is the bot sort of responding to their collection. So if you have any collections you want Novice Art Blogger to respond to, it's available. So this utilizes at the time it was a new technology, this kind of automatic image captioning technology that recognizes things in images and then tries to create an accurate description of that image. And this is sort of trained on photographs that have kind of been annotated by humans. And then all that is inputted into a system that kind of creates a model which can kind of automatically caption images it hasn't seen before. But it's kind of designed to work with kind of photographic imagery and kind of where there's a very clear subject matter, such as a person riding a motorcycle on a dirt road. So I kind of wanted to sort of test that system. And I created a system that sort of just takes abstract art from the Tate's online website, processes it through this demonstration, and then outputs it to Tumblr. And I do a bit of editing to those generated captions to give it a slightly different tone. So for this untitled piece by Andy Warhol, it says, "Brightly colored lights and other things filled with confetti are placed on the table. Or then again, a statue depicting a sculpture of different colors. That reminds me of the donut that has sprinkles and the fireworks on the table going off." This piece by Joseph Beuys, a man on skis or skies holding the poles on the horizon, but also a man flying through the sky on a hill. It's as similar to a person on skis holding both poles towards the sky. And I actually think I can see that man holding the poles at the bottom there, but maybe that's just me now being influenced by the caption. Here's one that was very popular. There is a lot of elephants in the river, but also there is a lot of elephants in the river. It is similar to a sandy area with an elephant made from sand. And one of my personal favorites is Death and the Conquistador by Aubrey Williams, a close-up view of a pizza with one looking at it. Or is it depicting a pizza that is ready to bite off a large bowl? I'm reminded of a pizza decorated to look like an angry bird. And of course, I had to Google what a pizza decorated look like an angry bird looks like. And I must say that there are some similarities there. And it's really hard for me to see the original meaning of the work now, because actually the Tate kindly invited me to go for a tour around and look at this piece. And I was just looking at it going, I only see pizza now. It's really... But they were really fascinated by this project, which was very rewarding. And it was also a very popular website. I mean, again, this is just the first week of it launching, having like thousands of followers and people like thanking you for decoded the over-articulated "I love you, novice art blogger." A very interesting sort of response. Another piece I worked on, 2013, so this is actually sort of after the first kind of Mickey series, I worked on this piece called Venus of Google. This is very much using kind of software, but also kind of exploiting Google search, especially its kind of image search. So when you kind of put in an image into Google image search, it will create these strange kind of collages of things that look visually similar. Here's me having just put in a box, a wooden box, and it's kind of found all these kind of bodily shapes and bodily colors, and I found, image comparison is a really interesting driver, and I wanted to create a piece of software that would create a sculpture using also just basically image comparison. So this piece of software, all it's doing is it's finding these objects on Google, and then it's trying to create a sculpture by comparing the object that it's working on with the original object that it's looking at. So it's all it's doing is constantly testing the measurement of like, does this piece look anything more like the photograph that you're showing me? And because I'm not a super clever software programmer, this took like 5 hours. But it's sort of 5 hours where I don't have to do anything. And I like the fact that it kind of never quite fully recreated the source image, but it kind of resulted in this kind of distorted version, which I named the Venus of Google. This is kind of a shame, but I kind of wanted to do this for like every object in that search, and maybe I'll revisit it one day. The idea was to kind of create this kind of long tail multiplier. That was what was going to be the name of the wider project, which is just kind of pairing up, Google image search to sort of a object creator. And then in 2016, I worked with Jody. Jody are these amazing artist duo that are really pioneers of net art. I was really thrilled that they wanted to work with me, because I'm a big fan of Jody, but they're slightly crazy, but that's great. And we worked over a year, and we came up with this really strange project. I used to find it very difficult to describe this project because it felt like we didn't really do anything other than like go on the internet for like weeks on end. But it really became it kind of fits this lineage. This project fits this lineage of the artist as kind of collector or as curator, because we're sort of downloading all these objects that we find that we found interesting, or just instinctively we'd have to download them. So there's a lot of kind of amateur 3D scanning and analog amateur modeling that have been generated through different apps and platforms, and then we've managed to kind of find them on the internet and sort of roughly categorize them and put them in folders on our computers. And it made me think a bit of like Eduardo Paolozzi's Lost Magic Kingdoms, which is Paolozzi did a show in 1986 where he went to the British Museum and started to create his own collages of items from their collections. And it's really this fine line between, are these like the artist's own collages or ready-mades? Or is this kind of a different way of displaying objects in the museum? So we started to kind of, the show is kind of an installation where we show all these kind of found objects. And again, they're sort of collaged together and they're kind of dissected and cut. And they're sort of all paired by categories that we created. And we sort of made these special cabinets where you can kind of forensically study some of these models in ways that you might not do if you just found them on the internet. There was these kind of, okay, that's really glitchy. That's the documentation of the exhibition and the projections. And the projections were these kind of like, yeah, the collages, but they followed the same logic as our folder structure and how we kind of categorized all these objects that we downloaded. And then this kind of led to, like, for me, again, this something Kasia was introducing, this idea of selection. In that case, it was very much an artist selection process. But with Shiv Integer, I worked with Julian Desworth to make a project where the selection process is totally automated. And a Shiv Integer is a process that entirely operates within one platform, which is Thingiverse. And I have to explain Thingiverse a little bit first. It's a platform that allows people to share designs for 3D printed objects. So the platform has very sort of utilitarian objects and things that are deemed 3D printable. They're sort of calibrated and engineered so that, you know, they kind of standard everyday 3D printers can print them. And everything is kind of shared with a copyright system called Creative Commons. So once you upload an object, you give it like a Creative Commons license, and the license has these kind of different these different strands where you can say, well, I only want my name credited, or I want to make sure this model is shared but not used for commercial reasons, and so on. So this is kind of like how, I guess, normal user Thingiverse, you can find the objects, you can download the objects. There was, yeah, a lot of kind of mechanical parts and functional parts. So I used, interestingly, software that's designed just for testing browsers, I used to automate the downloading of Thingiverse. And so I have almost like my own copy of Thingiverse on my hard drive. It's you know, terabytes of data. So I'm pretty sure some of Oliver Larrick's scans are in that hard drive for sure. But I have no idea. Like, I don't look at the... I don't go through the archive myself. I don't even... I don't really make any decisions on that sort of level. I'm sort of working as this kind of meta creator where I'm making the system. And so Shiv Integer, what it does is that it kind of collages these objects together and then outputs them to Thingiverse, and it gives these objects a name as well. So this one's called Escher's Rail Merged with a Picatinny Adapter. And the names are sort of like word salads of the original objects. This is a small selection of some of the objects that's created. The last I checked today, and it's nearing 700 objects. And it could do a lot more objects, but we've had to kind of turn the volume down because we'll get a lot of complaints, which we'll get into. But here's just some of the objects that it's created and some of the names. Vertical pyramid of a dip chip, attachable symbols, retraction model, case with a sad living, robo-frob containing a base. And then we get these kind of comments like, it's the best robo-frob containing a base that I've ever seen. You're probably one of those morons who think Jackson Pollock was a genius. I really hate when I'm searching for something real and end up with results cluttered with this kind of crap. Don't kid yourself. Oh, collapse shit with shit will never make poetry or art. And I get hundreds of these comments. I have a special folder filter on my email now because this is a daily occurrence now. I just like to quote Shakespeare. Shakespeare says, on the whole, I think it's a worthwhile project. It reminds me of something from a William Gibson novel. It is disheartening to see all the amount of hate it has generated. This is like one of the more thoughtful comments. I like this part. Of course, I guess with that, their comments are part of the art as well. And I'll come back to this a bit later. I like this one particular user called Bright Lights, who writes these short stories about the objects. Which is amazing, like about hydroponic trophy, it's written a story about evolving robotic overlords needing to have a place to carry their spare batteries on their bodies. So that's what a hydroponic trophy is. And I liked, this project ran anonymously and only under the guise or the pseudonym of Shiv Integer. So it sort of sparked all these kind of conspiracy theories, like, yeah, I think this guy is the cheeseburger guy. There's a whole backstory of who the cheeseburger guy is and why he's not liked by the Thingiverse community. This is the moment where the chief engineer of Thingiverse realizes that Thingiverse, Shiv Integer, is an anagram for Thingiverse. Giphy, mind blown. And this is the installation of the project. So I had this idea of this kind of extendable tunnel. So this is something that can be extended to exhibitions where there's a bit more of a budget and we can get more objects in them. So this is a whole display tunnel that's almost like designed for the ongoing unfinished work that is Shiv Integer. Okay, I'm running out of time, so I just flick through some of these quickly. But this is kind of like, this is me doing reproductions of Shiv Integer. And interestingly, these artworks, because of Creative Commons licensing, they have to keep the list of authors that have contributed to the object. So beneath the object, there's these captions that are just listing all the original, the multiple authors that these that have licensed their objects. And then, yeah, we sort of downloaded all the comments and created these kind of angry posters. So they're not so much ready-made, but like ready-mad. And then, yeah, part of this kind of accreditation involved having to make a credits, like as you would for a film. And this is all computer generated as well, because there's obviously so many objects now and so many names. And once we processed the software, this resulted in a 2-hour long video of just crediting people. And yeah, very, very quickly, there's this project launching next week called Vertigo in the Face of the Infinite. And it's this kind of internet art piece, which is this endless scrolling tower of all the stuff I'm collected. Oliver, maybe some of your pieces will show up. Probably, I don't know. It's all automated. And in a way, if anyone's used Twitter, they'll recognize this action of scrolling through an endless, infinite pile of crap. And in a way, it's a bit of a homage to the way we consume the internet now. That's it. Thank you.